This is Natalie Hutchison with UN News. Disarmament affairs are more of a marathon than a sprint, and each year, towards the end of October, the UN General Assembly's first committee meets to discuss the issue of ridding the world of weapons. This year, in an interview with UN News, in-house disarmament guru Michael Spies spelled out the dangerous effect in play of rising international tensions between the United States and Russia. The policy analyst noted the current strain on bilateral arms control between the two countries, pointing to the 1987 Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, known as the INF, which the U.S. is threatening to withdraw from. Mr. Spies spoke to Liz Cafidi about the year ahead on disarmament at the U.N.
This year, we have a whole lot of developments happening, affected by really the international context and tensions between the United States and Russia, which is having a big impact on the proceedings. And as we're moving forward, I think in this current review cycle for the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty as well, which has been in a bit of a precarious state since the 2015 review conference failed, and a number of developments that we've seen since then filling the gap. One of them I think we'll touch on later on is the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, the Nuclear Weapon Ban Treaty, as it's called. Another related development is the state of bilateral arms control between Russia and the United States. The New START Treaty, which was concluded in 2011, is due to expire in a couple of years' time, and the parties must either extend or replace it. And then more recently, we've had the difficulties with the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, which has been in the news as well. In the meantime, the General Assembly has been faced with trying to move forward other agendas like the cybersecurity issue, a new effort to take forward a Middle East zone free of weapons of mass destruction, and then also a number of new initiatives that are being pushed forward as well.
You have a lot on your plate.
Yeah, it's a very busy time for us.
So maybe we can start with the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty.
So this is one of a late Cold War arms control treaty. It's unique in that it entirely eliminated medium and interrange missiles from the arsenals of Russia and the United States. What has happened in the past 4 years is that there have been concerns that the United States ultimately made public about possible compliance issues regarding a ground-based cruise missile that the Russians had developed, and the U.S. claimed violated the treaty. The Russians put their own compliance concerns on the table regarding land-based missile defense interceptors that the United States has been placing in Europe. And so you've had these sort of mutual recriminations. And so there's a bilateral commission that the parties have been discussing this, but the United States announced its intent to withdraw. It has not yet given its formal notifications, and so it's not yet gone past the point of no return, but this signals that this is indeed their intention.
What can you tell us about the situation on North Korea?
The situation this year has been quite remarkable compared to the very tense situation we had last year, where DPRK really escalated its testing and development of ballistic missiles, including missiles capable of striking U.S. territories or even a continental range ballistic missile that it tested.
In July 2017, the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons was concluded. How many countries are needed to ratify this treaty?
This is the first nuclear weapon treaty negotiated within the UN in 20 years. And that fact alone is a big reason why it exists in the first place. It was born out of frustration with the slow pace of nuclear disarmament. It also reflected a growing awareness of the catastrophic humanitarian consequences that would result from even a single use of a nuclear weapon. At present, 69 states have signed the treaty. Another 19 have ratified, and it needs 50 states to ratify before it can enter into force.
Would the nuclear weapon states be required to ratify?
Their ratification is not required for the treaty to enter into force. It has what's called a simple mechanism for just 50 states.
What do they speak about in cybersecurity?
In this area, it's really been about regulating the use of cyber technologies, and we have two competing proposals on the table. The focus of the work, and I think the most important outcome so far, has been in 2015, this agreement on 11 voluntary norms of responsible behavior in cyberspace.
11 norms?
Yes.
What are two norms?
A very important one is simply reaffirming that international law, including international humanitarian law, which includes the law of armed conflict, applies to any acts committed in cyberspace. The other norms deal with the responsibility of states to protect their cyber infrastructure.
And each country would have to verify this?
Since these norms are voluntary, it's up to each country to examine them and to implement them through their own national laws and policies. a focus of the work moving forward is getting some greater clarity in terms of how these should be implemented and making it a bit more concrete.
Sounds like there's quite a ways to go on that one.
Yeah, it is very contentious. So far, the work has gone on in smaller groups, which is a normal way in disarmament to start off issues or to move forward.
Nuclear weapon-free zones. There are several in existence right now.
That's correct. There are five nuclear weapon-free zones that are located on populated parts of the planet. Almost 120 states participate in nuclear weapon-free zone. A big focus recently has been strengthening coordination and cooperation between the zones. And so we are working together with Kazakhstan on an initiative to help consolidate that cooperation among them.
And I understand that there's a new nuclear weapon-free zone in discussion in the Middle East.
Right. It's been on the agenda for decades. And it's been very closely connected with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, because when the NPT was indefinitely extended in 1995, that decision came with a set of separate decisions and, importantly, a resolution on the Middle East in which the three depositaries of the NPT, Russia, the United States, and the United Kingdom, agreed to support the efforts of the states of the region towards achieving this zone. Here, the Arab group has decided to bring the issue into the General Assembly. They have tabled a decision that would request the Secretary General to convene a conference on the zone in 2019. This proposal has not yet been brought for action in the committee, but we do anticipate it will be adopted, and we will have to try to see how we can best work towards implementing this very ambitious undertaking.
We haven't touched on small arms.
This has been a major emphasis, particularly within the Secretary General's disarmament agenda. And so this agenda has three major areas. The first is disarmament to save humanity, which focuses on weapons of mass destruction, disarmament that saves lives, focused on conventional weapons, and then disarmament for future generations, looking at very new technologies. Small arms is one of the major features of the saving lives part of the agenda. Our big innovation there is partnering with the Peacebuilding Support Office and opening a new funding facility through the Peacebuilding Fund, and to completely move away from our current approach of supporting small arms-related work in countries to moving towards a whole system, country-based approach. And how this would work in practice if, like, a particular country wants to approach the UN because it has a problem with small arms, well, this would be sort of a top-to-bottom sort of thing. We would, the buy-in of the country, look at their governance frameworks, their national legislations, all the way down to the programming that the UN country team does, and to making sure that all UN actors who are involved on small arms issues in that country are working off of a common strategy, and that there's a common funding facility to support that work.